And if you're new or you're coming back, welcome home. You're off the hook. And you know, I can't understand why people, well, especially the guys, wouldn't want to come in here and stay in here like forever. Because here's what happened tonight. I had dinner with a few of my friends, and we drive in here and we park over there. Right when we park and we get out of the car, a van pulls up, and there's like 30 of these most gorgeous women on the freaking planet. If they could only get sober, boy oh boy would there be issues. Anyway, so welcome. You know, if you're one of the van people, we welcome you. And if you don't know what a van person is, it's very simply, if you're living in a place that you don't own, and at about 6:30 or 7 o'clock each night, they say to you, time to get on the van. That's a van person. Tonight's place was filled with Band-Aids, so I like the Band-Aids too. Anyway, in case you didn't figure it out, I love laughing. And you know, that's what we were talking about at dinner. The war is over. If you're sitting here, you probably haven't laughed in a long time. And if you plug into this thing, you'll realize laughter is a real, real, real part of this sobriety thing. It says it in the big book. It says very early on, it says, for after all, God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. As a matter of fact, my sponsor used to, that's on page 133, by the way. My sponsor used to say, yeah, but in your case, he's saying happy, Jewish, and free. Which proves, once again, we're not a religious organization. Actually, look, first of all, I want to thank, because so many people came up to me tonight and asked me how my wife was doing. And that is like a testimony to the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, last Thursday, during the day, I picked Sandra up, and she came out to the car. We were going out to grab lunch, and she couldn't breathe. And so I ran out to the doctor, and he says, Paul, there's something real wrong. I need to do a scan with different colors or something, but I can't do it here, so take her immediately to the hospital. So I took her to Northwest Hospital, and they looked at her. They immediately admitted her. She had what was known as pulmonary embolisms, blood clots on each lung, and she was in the hospital till Sunday. And thank God everything was fine. She flew back to New York. She's seeing her doctor up there tomorrow. But I was thinking about this. Imagine if I was using, and my wife came out to the car, and she says, honey, I can't breathe, man. She was like grayish. She says, I can't breathe. I'd say, well, listen, why don't you wait here? Because I have to go take care of something. And I wish you the best of luck. And they told me if I didn't get it, then I would have died. So, man, it's a change of everything about it. These things are the 12 steps. There's no secrets to the 12 steps. There's 12 of them. And they really work. Okay, and I'm going to real, people say, what step are you on? And I never really know, except tonight, I do know we're going to focus on the seventh step, because just that's the deal for tonight. But I'll sum up the first six pretty quickly. The first step, because obviously, if you keep going into one of those places, you know, the band places, you obviously are having an issue with the first step. And the first half of the first step is the only thing we have to do perfectly. And as we admitted, we're powerless over booze and drugs, certainly in my case, and I believe in everyone else's. And that's the truth, and a truth is never going to change. You're powerless the day you get here, you're going to be powerless till the day you die. The second half of the first step, that our lives have become unmanageable, that's true when we get here, but that's a fact. because when we get there, our lives are unmanageable, they're unbearable, they're incomprehensible. But once you stay here a little while, and you're sober a little while, you get to the second step where we came to believe that there's a manager, a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. And that's what the whole program is about. It says all throughout the big book, the purpose of this book is to help the reader come to find a power greater than themselves that can help manage their lives. So it says it in black and white. There's no secrets here. It's all straight through. There's a whole chapter devoted to people like me and probably you called We Agnostics. And it's about people that don't believe in anything. And yet to not believe in anything, you probably have to believe in something. Because think about it. If you're that convinced that there's nothing, well, you believe in the fact that there's nothing. And if you stick here long enough, you'll realize that's pretty not possible. And then after you get, like, with what, by the way, John, that was great how it works wherever you are. Great reading. Back there. Oh, there he is. He's hiding. You didn't overdose between the time you... No, I mean, you were, like, under the thing there. I didn't know where you were. Anyway, right after how it works, it says, right after that, it says, A, we were alcoholics, could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved us from our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was sought. You know what the next line in the big book says? Wow, I like that. So you're not a bad person. That was good, Buffy. That was good. I know that, Bobby. I'm only kidding. But it says, just for those that didn't hear us, being convinced, we were now at step three. So you've been through four chapters of the book. You've been through Bill's story, more about alcoholism. There's the solution. We Agnostics. And then you get here, you read how it works, telling you how it works. And then right after that, it says, now you're convinced. Obviously, if you read those four chapters and you're not convinced, you probably have some issues, because those chapters are convincing. And so then you're at step three, and please, there's no mumbo jumbo. Don't worry about it. You're not going to get, matter of fact, I'll show you just how whacked I am. And I'm sober quite a while. I was sitting back here, and I noticed, which I've noticed this before, this is the First United Methodist Church of Boca Raton, and I found this envelope, and it says, my offering. So I was thinking, perhaps, since everybody has an envelope in front of you, based on the talk, say what your offering will be and just put it in and give it to us on the way out. That's a joke. Everybody got very freaking serious. That's a joke. J-O-K-E. Wear the world like a loose garment. Easy does it. I don't need your offerings. Give it to whoever takes them. Anyway, you need a sponsor. What's a sponsor? Wow. That's the one reason I never became a professional comedian. I really always wanted to. But I can't handle telling a joke and nobody laughing. When I go to a comic show and the comedian tells a joke and the room goes silent, I feel badly for him. So that's the reason. I have friends that are professional comedians, and I couldn't do it for that reason. So I wish maybe you could pipe in some laughter when there's no. Anyway, so you need a sponsor. What's a sponsor? It's just a guide. It's somebody that's been down the road before you. He obviously drank and used to get here, and he's been sober a while, or she's been sober a while, and they've been down the place. For those of you that are old enough, of which there are a few of you, you can't ever do that. When I'm speaking, you can't talk to anyone else because your blonde head jumps out, I see it, and I get distracted, and then I can't remember where I was going, okay? No, I cannot sponsor you. So here's what a sponsor is. For those of you old enough to remember, there was this thing called AAA, and it's called the American Automobile Association. And if you were, probably it's still around, I mean, it is still around, but if you're going on a trip, you call them up, you say, I'm going from Fort Lauderdale to New York City, and they send you this big thing in the mail with all of these pages. And it tells you how to go there. It tells you the best route. It tells you either the quickest route and the scenic route, but more importantly, it tells you where to watch the speed tracks. It tells you where there's construction, where there's rough roads. It tells you where you can get fuel and lodging. Tells you where you can get food. Tells you where you really have to be careful because there's dangerous stuff happening. That's what a sponsor is for. He has been or she has been where you are, and they can help you through the deal. So without a sponsor, my opinion, very little chance of making this deal. Just someone you can call, a go-to person, or have a bunch of people, but have one sponsor. I thank God I've had four sponsors since I'm here. Two of them have passed sober a long time. One of them got loaded and came back. I just saw him last week. And one of them I still have. But my sponsor, Vincent, who's on the west coast of Florida, when I asked him to be my sponsor, he says, I don't really know if I want that job. Because every time I talk about my sponsors, Ray, may he rest in peace, Brett T, may he rest in peace. So Vincent said, I've had 18 heart surgeries. I'm really not looking for this job description. So then you can say, Vincent, may he rest in peace. But he's in good shape, and so he agreed to be my sponsor. Now we get to the fourth step, and what is that simply? We just do a life story. It tells you in the big book how to do it. Mrs. Brown, Mr. Brown, Dr. Brown. I mean, all of these people, and you know, like your life is filled with resentments and anger and fear. And you know what? You just write. And I don't think it matters how you write or what you write. Just write. You ask God for help, you pick up a pen and a piece of paper, and it's not something that's done just once. My opinion. And some people that think it's done doesn't mean they're wrong. But the way I was taught and what I've done many fourth and fifth steps. Because there's always stuff that's going on. This is life, man. So you write the fourth step, however you write it. And then you share with a sponsor. We admit it to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our roles. Well, the exact nature of our rooms, we just wrote down. We wrote down how we ended up in these rooms, what we've done to end up in these rooms, all of the people we've sabotaged and abused to end up in these rooms. I mean, I know for me what I did to my parents. I came from a good family. And I just so, the word disappointment is an understatement. My parents could never get a peaceful night's sleep for 15 years. Why? Because they never knew where the phone call was coming from. Were they going to get a call from the highway patrol that I totaled my car on the Long Island Expressway and I was dead? Were they going to get a call from the police precinct in Harlem that I got knifed and I'm in jail up there? Were they going to get a call from somebody on the Lower East Side that I was overdosed and they found my identification there? Were they going to get a call from me telling them that somebody's going to kill me if I don't come up with $5,000 in 30 minutes? These are what we do to our parents. So if you don't think that you really didn't do any damage when you were out there, just think about the people in your circle, whether your parents, your siblings, relatives, whatever. So that's the fifth step, is that's what we do. We've already admitted it to God if we're writing it. We've already admitted it to ourselves if we're writing it. So the tough part is admitting it to someone else, and that's where the humility comes in. Because the way I looked at it, well, if I admitted it to God and I admit it to myself, why do I have to bring anyone else into it? But you know what? That's just not the way it works. And when you do a fifth step, it's not like a reading exercise. I remember I wrote all of these pages, and Fred, I went over to Fred's, and we sit down. I had a whole legal pad, you know, pages and pages. Matter of fact, I didn't know whether to call my sponsor or to call Warner Brothers with my first fifth step, because I made it all up. I mean, I talked about being like a criminal, and I mean like a John Gotti criminal, you know, not like a little heroin addict, alcoholic criminal who crawled around the street begging for a $2 bag. So, but I made up this whole freaking thing about women and the whole deal. And I saw it, but anyway, that passed, you know. Because, you know, just that's not what we are. And then, so none of us are that bad or that good. We all have this thing mixed in. Even the best of us have bad stuff, and the worst of us have good stuff. And that's the deal of this room. Now let's get on to the meat and potatoes of this thing. By the way, and this is once again my opinion, the only real work that is done, or the only effort that is done as a person, a newcomer to a 12-step fellowship, is with the fourth step. Because the other steps, you're just doing nothing. You know, it's like, I know now they have assignments and write and questions. And let me tell you something. The questions that they ask me, are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you want to stop? Then shut up and we'll pick you up in the morning. Those were the questions. That was the list of things they asked me. And then tomorrow they said the same thing. I said, well, when can I share? They say, not for the near future. You'll listen, because if we want to learn how to die, we're going to talk to you. If you want to learn how to live, we suggest you listen. So the bottom line is, you share this fifth step, and now we get to the meat and potatoes. The sixth and the seventh step. And we're going to really focus on the seventh step, because I believe most of these steps are get ready and go. Okay? The first step we got here. The second step we come to believe. Third step we make a decision. Fourth step we write an inventory. The fifth step we share it. The sixth step we're getting ready to get rid of these defects of character, these shortcomings. By the way, same exact thing. Don't, you know, you can spend, and people have, hours in discussions. Well, I know what Bill meant when he wrote defects, and a defect is different than a shortcoming. The bottom line is the same exact thing. He didn't want to put two words to end a sentence in the same way. So he changed it. One sentence said defects and one said shortcomings. They're maladjustment indexes of our lives. They're things that separate us from the grace of God. They're things that are contrary to what society dictates is proper. Okay, I'm not going to ever use the word normal because I don't know what that means. I have no desire to be there. I don't have any thoughts that I'll ever get there, and I just don't want to be there. I'm so far from normal. I mean, you know, I've watched a lot of people come into AA and develop a halo. You know, it's like they never drank and they never used, and they're going around and you know, you can just like see. Until that halo becomes a noose, because there ain't no halos in this room. We all got here because we're maladjusted to life, and we can't function out there, and that's how we get here. So let us help you get better. So in the sixth step, we just simply have the list that we're ready for to get rid of. Where do we get these shortcomings from and these defects? From our fourth step. We already wrote it down. So obviously, if you wrote it down and you shared it and you realize this is something that has totally affected your life negatively, well, obviously, you're going to want to get rid of it. Now, my sponsor, one of my sponsors, Ray Allen, God rest his soul, He used to have these pearls of wisdom, and he would simply look at me and he would say, Paul, the seventh step is the shortest yet most powerful step in the entire program. It's seven words. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. That's what this whole thing's about. Because after you're sober a while, and after you haven't used or had a drink for a while, and after now you may even have a job, and you may have a relationship, and you may even be living in your own place, and after that stuff happens, then any issues you have are defects of character rearing their ugly head. And it's always going to happen. I'll tell you why. Just to show you how it's always going to happen, I haven't had a car accident in almost 30 years, until 2 days ago. Now, my head's been sort of rectally inserted because of my wife's thing. I still go to my meetings, I talk to my sponsor, I talk to the guys that I sponsor, but my head hasn't been right. You know, I was out of fear, I see my wife in the hospital, you know, the whole bit, so I was scared. I'm driving, and I'm pulling in, this was like so weird, I decide to go to a gas station, and I'm ready to get gas in the gas station near my house. And then I get this bright thought. I say, no, you know what? I want to go to this other gas station because they have the New York Post and I want to buy the paper so I can go home and read it. I pull into this other gas station. As I'm pulling in, some guy's in the gas station driving this way, and I hit it, the front of my car against the side panel, the right side panel, the rear panel, of his car, a little damage to his car, my car is shot. Here's what I did, because I'm so sober, 35 years. I jump out of the car. Are you kidding me? Do you know how fast you were going? He says, what are you talking about? I'm at the gas station. I'm driving. So he gets scared. He says, I'm calling the police. I said, you don't have to call the police. We exchange wives. No, because I could believe that you're going to make up a story. He already picked up on this 12 seconds into our interaction. And he calls the police. So now I'm waiting there and the cops come. So I decide to let him talk first to the cops. So he's out there talking to them. And then they come over to me. They say, license and registration. I get out of the car. I say, listen, officer. He was going very fast, going right across, and then I came into the station. And the cop looks at me. He says, well, perhaps you can explain to me how the entire front of your car is smashed, and you hit the back part of his vehicle. Obviously, you had plenty of time to do whatever you wanted to do. So let's stop with insulting my... This is a cop telling me not to insult his intelligence. So let's just figure that out with no demeaning of cops. So anyway, we exchange stuff, and my car's in the shop being fixed. So that's the bottom line is, I don't care how long you're sober. My default mechanism, very often, is it's your fault, and let's agree on that, and then we won't have a problem. That's just where I go to, and I'm an active member of this program. So I just pity you if you're not an active member. All right, now, we get to the seventh step. And the one thing I want to say, just for any of you people that are having trouble staying sober, or you get the new job, or you get the new woman, or the new guy, here's what I'm going to promise you. Anything that you put in front of your sobriety will be the second thing that you lose. It's just guaranteed. That's written in stone. I'm not telling you not to have relationships. I'm not telling you not to have jobs. I'm not telling you not to have places to live. please keep this number one. And if you keep this number one, you can do anything. But if you forget this as number one, and you're in this fantastic relationship, I mean, some guy says to me, I met her. I said, really? Yeah, actually. I met her in the meeting, and we really connected. Well, that's encouraging when you think about who you're connecting with. Anybody in this meeting or any meeting is damaged goods. That's like walking down the public aisle and asking for dented cans. I mean, that's what you got here. You got a group of dented cans. Oh, but she's the one. That's great. Alright, well, good luck. You know, just keep my number handy and make sure to keep going to your meetings. A day or two later, the guy will call me up and say, I can't believe it. I said, what happened? She gave me a meeting with another guy. We're so sick. And relationships are the toughest thing on the freaking planet, so just easy does it in that area. Or even if you're gonna do it, just make sure to keep the sponsor's number on speed dial. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but I had written this note last week. Is that like incoming? Is that an Iranian missile? We got those warships out there. They don't only want the Jews either. So here's the key that last week, when I was doing, you know, some studying and research for this talk that I didn't give last week, I read in the paper that Ben and Jerry's, greatest ice cream in the world, this isn't a commercial for them, but Ben and Jerry's just partnered up, this is last week, just partnered up with the brownie salted caramel brown ale. So now they're gonna have alcohol in Ben and Jerry's. Now I can see all of us waiting online at 6 in the morning. What time do you open? Come on, I need that salted caramel. I couldn't believe it when I read this. Here, like two of my biggest issues, ice cream and booze, and they get to combine it. Oh, boy. So that's a true story. I just read it last week. You can Google it, whatever that means. And just for the record, you know, back to the third step, faith, which is what's necessary here, is not rational. It really makes no sense. And if it were rational, then it would be called reason. It wouldn't be called faith. Faith is believing in that which you cannot see. In other words, when I came here, I believed that you people were telling the truth. And they used to say, just believe that we believe. And that's the way this worked. My first meeting, someone had a t-shirt on. It said, I can't, we can. All of this time later, I still can't do this alone. That's why I keep suiting up and showing up. The greatest deal on the planet, but I can't do this alone. Together, we can do anything, because together, we're being supervised by a power greater than ourselves that I choose to call God. Okay, seventh step. There's this thing called pagels. Now, I don't know if anyone ever heard of this, but I'm going to share it with you. It's the only way I remember things is when they're cute little sayings. If I'm having a problem today, one of my defects is acting up. Because I haven't used or thought about using or drinking in a very long time. So if I'm having an issue, I'm not feeling right, one of my defects, one of my shortcomings is acting up. So there's a word, pagels. Think about this. Pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, and sloth. Seven deadly sins, which was invented long before we arrived. And any time anything is going on in my life, it's either my false pride, I'm pissed off at someone, I want more than my fair, which is the greed, the gluttony, I'm over there at Ben and Jerry's, the lust, we don't even need to discuss right now, the envy, and the sloth, just wanting to do nothing. Those are the seven deadly sins. They're for people in here, and they're for people out there. But the only difference is, when people out there act on them, they don't end up wanting to kill themselves. Or they don't end up drinking and using. They just operate. That's on them. That's not my problem. I know I can't handle any of those. You know, we were talking on the way here. And this, to me, every time I do a seventh step, becomes one of the most important things for me. Okay? And there's a saying in the Jewish religion, and this is not a Jewish lesson we're giving you, but there's a saying in the Jewish religion, it's called Lashon Hara. And what that means is the evil inclination, or gossip, or slander. Now let me explain something. And I paid the price, and today I'm a little bit better at it. Hopefully to get much better at it. Most of us, especially if we're sober for a while, even if we're not, even if we're living in one of those places, the most natural thing we do is talk about other people. I mean, what do you do when you're three or four of you? You're going to go home tonight, and the women are going to say, "Wow, he was pretty hot." I know that already. You can't have me, even though I have a lot of money, you cannot have me. Because I'm a chick magnet, we know that. And the guys are going to go home and say, "Wow, did you see all of those babes in the second row? Oh my God, I wonder what place they're at. Let's go play softball over there." I mean, whatever it is. The bottom line is that Lashon Hara is me talking about you, or anyone talking about anyone else. Let me explain what happens when we do that. If I come up to you and I say, "Wow, did you hear what happened to?" Obviously, I'm saying it more often than not because they just got elected to, you know, the Broward County Board of Commissioners. Usually, it's because they got busted, they overdosed, they're in jail, their wife left. I mean, you know, because that's what we love to do, because in the seventh step it says, who doesn't like to feel a little bit superior? So if I'm cutting you down, that's to build me up. So that's what we're doing, okay? Now, this is so dangerous, and here's the reason. It says in the readings that I do, to commit Lashon Hara, or to gossip or slander someone else, it's more serious than murder, idolatry, which is praying to idols, and adultery combined. Now those are three pretty serious sins, wouldn't you agree? Yes?
Yes.
Thank you. Mason, you gotta get me booked at Better Place. I mean, really, you gotta like take their pulse before they walk in. So here's what's happening. By me talking about you, the reason it's more serious than those three really serious things is because I'm damaging three people as I'm doing this. I'm obviously damaging the person I'm speaking about because I'm cutting them up. They're not there. It may or may not be true, and like that. So, you know, they can't even be there to give their side of the story. I'm equally damaging myself by demeaning myself, by lowering myself, to bring myself to this place where the only way I can feel good about me is by making other people feel bad about you. But even more serious, or equally as serious, or the third person I'm damaging is the person I'm making listen to it. Because now, I have just told you, whoever the you are, a story about him or about her. And now this may or may not be a true story. May or may not even have confirmation. I might have heard it from someone else. And just because the conversation has quieted for a while, I'll just jump in and say, wow, did you hear? So now I took this thing that I have no confirmation of, even if it was true, but forgetting that, I just heard it, and I'm telling it to you. And you, because you listen to what I say, possibly then tell it to 15 other people. And those 15 other people tell it to however many more. And what has happened is you've totally decimated someone's character. Now, let me explain this one story to you. Back in the olden days. Oh, by the way, Ray Allen, my sponsor, whenever we'd be in a car driving to Miami, go to a meeting or whatever, way back. And obviously, like I said, we all start talking about people. Ray would turn his hearing aid off. That was the way he dealt with anyone talking about anyone else. Just didn't want to be there. Didn't want to participate. And I'm getting a little better at that. I don't want to hear it. What's the point? And I'll tell you this one story related to that. And it happened in olden times, and there was this guy, and every time, you know, they had villages very far apart. And every time someone came to his village, he would totally blaspheme the guy, the rabbi in the next village. And no matter what, he didn't even know that guy. But he would say, oh my God, that guy, he doesn't put the money in the basket. He cheats on his wife. He doesn't observe the Sabbath. He's totally putting out some phony stuff. And he's terrible. He did this for 10 years. Everybody that came through his village to go to the other village. Finally, one day, whatever reason, he has like this spiritual awakening. And he says to himself, you know what? I've been really terrible about what I did to this guy. I better go to the other village and try to make amends. So he walks X number of miles, he gets there, and he pleads for mercy with this guy. He tells him what he's done for 10 years. And he begs for forgiveness. And God bless you. And the rabbi looks at him and he says, you know what, I can forgive you. But I want you to do one thing. When you get back to your village, I want you to go in your house and I want you to get a pillow, a big pillow, a feather stuffed pillow. And I want you to go out into the courtyard and I want you to cut the pillow up and I want you to shake it and let the feathers go everywhere they go. And as soon as you can pick up every feather, I'll consider us even. Because what happens, the feather that you told me, I told him. He told 10 people. They told 5 people. And there's no way that can ever be retracted. So the best thing to try not to do is to talk about anyone else. You want to talk about something or someone, talk about God. And so that story so impacted me because I was one of the major offenders. Those are the only stories that impact me. stuff that I have done over and over and over, got sick and tired of doing it, and because, you know, by the way, you don't need to worry about the steps or anything else until you're in enough pain. Because otherwise, why would you work any steps? It's just like when we come here, we come because the pains and humiliations of drinking and using have kicked our ass. We walk into one of these places, we're desperate. Like was used to be said, the gift of desperation, which I found out was G-O-D. The gift of desperation, God. And so then we're sober for a while. And then whatever it is happens to push you back into that pain. And when the pain of the pain gets great enough, then the pain of the change is not that difficult. See, when my pain out there was bad enough, I was willing to walk in here. And I was willing to ask someone for help. And I was willing to admit that I didn't know. And I was willing to admit that my scorecard read zero. And I had no more answers. And I used every person, place, and thing that I ever interacted with. And however I did it, I begged someone for help. Now, we beg in different ways. But I'll tell you what, I was so petrified of going back out there, and still am. Not yesterday's news, still am. I watch people with long-term sobriety that go out and use or drink. Their chances of getting back are very minimal. And then even when they do, they're shot. Because once you're here, you know, accept that you're here. You don't need to take the elevator down any lower and, you know, just get out. Let us love you back to life. And that's what Ray always told me. You know, there's three things. Oh, you know what I was thinking about? Because I spoke to him today. A friend of mine in New York, Joe. And we go to meetings at 7:30 in the morning, meeting out in Long Island whenever I'm there in the summer. And then we go to the back of his house and we'll have espresso, 8:30 or 9, and we'll talk, you know, obviously. 3, 5, 8, 10 of us, you know, whatever. So one day I'm telling a story, which you can obviously tell I like to do. And in the middle of the story, Joe starts laughing. And I look at him and I say, "What are you laughing about? I didn't finish the story." He says, "I just realized something." I said, "What's that?" He says, "You sponsor a lot of guys, right?" I said, "Well, I've sponsored guys over the years." He says, "And a lot of them stay sober, right?" I say, "Well, the ones that are supposed to stay sober, by the grace of God, they do. Very little to do with me." He says, "But I just figured something out while you were telling this story." I say, "What's that?" He says, "By the time you finish a story, the person has 2 years already." Once he told me that, I never forgot. That was 5 years ago, and I never forgot it, because it's true. I love speaking. I love watching the interaction. I love maybe that one person picks up one thing. You know, there's what's known as a triangle of self-obsession, and it's resentment, it's anger, and it's fear. And if I'm in a bad place, it's for one of those reasons. Resentment is over something that happened. Anger is over something that's happening. And fear is over something that may or may not happen in the future. That's why the secret to this deal is live right here, right now, in today. Right here, right now, just for the record, none of us have any issues. I don't care what's going on in your mind. I don't care what kind of issues you have at home. I don't care if you have the IRS at your door, the FBI, the DEA, the whatever those Iranian lookers are. Who are those people? ISIS. That's like a song. ISIS on day. Anyway, back in the 60s. Never mind. I'm sorry. The background. So in any case, it doesn't matter what's going on in your life, because right here, right now, you have no problems. And that's the secret to attending these meetings. You know, the last thing I'm going to say, well, it may be the last thing, and it may not be. Oh, no, this is a cool story. And it will be. And then next week, we'll catch up on the rest. Because I saw you looking at your phone, and it means that I'm running out of time.
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, then good, I'll tell two stories. Here we go. Ray Allen, my sponsor, he had, sobriety day was 1956. March 23rd, 1956. So for his 40-year anniversary, since I was one of his main pigeons in 1996, I went around and I did a collection from his pigeons, the other pigeons. That's, by the way, what they used to call sponsees. But now if you say that, they say, oh, that is so demeaning. That's my heroin connection never demeaned me. So anyway, so I went out and we took a collection and we got this Movado watch for Ray Allen. And on the back we inscribed his favorite saying. We put the date, which was 1996, we put 40 years and we put daily double. Because Ray always said, don't drink and go to meetings. Now let's fast forward to 10 years ago or 11 years ago. And Ray passed away, you know, sober almost 50 years. And I got the privilege of doing the eulogy at the service at the 101 Club. And I held up the watch. And I talked about how he gave, you know, we got this, and then his family gave it to me when he died. And then I said, since I was the one that took up the collection for the watch, if I knew I was going to end up with it, I don't wear silver jewelry. I would have asked everyone to dig a little deeper. I would have gotten a gold Movado. I mean, because this is just not my style. That's why I don't wear it a lot. But I wore it tonight just to prove that point. Anyway, here's another little clue along the Lasham Hara scenario. If it's not true, don't say it. And if it's not right, don't do it. And if it's not yours, don't take it. That sums up all the steps. The whole nine yards. That's what we're trying to do here as we're trying to become responsible and productive members of society. Please don't beat yourself up. No one gets perfection like what that guy read before here. You know, when they first said none of us are saints or no, whatever they say like that, I said, well, that's, or said, oh, no one among us has been able to achieve anything like perfect what? Adhering to these principles. Then it said, we are not saints. Well, the way I read that for a long time, no one means not anybody among us has been able to maintain anything like, to me means not even close, perfect adherence to these principles. Then it says we're not saints. So I was just running around doing what I was doing for a very long time, believe me. But you know what? A grateful alcoholic will not drink. Get grateful, act grateful, be grateful. I read something this morning that I do a lot of reading, and it said, just make someone else smile. Throughout. Now, even though I wasn't able to do that too much tonight because of this crowd, but Mason, you get me a better group. Thanks for listening.